This is American Real.
I am Roger Brooks. Welcome to the show.
This is American Real TV.
There's so much to talk to you about.
Where everyone...
You are a true inspiration.
...has...
We're all trying to do our part to change the world.
...a story.
What's your mission? What do you want your legacy to be? You have such a great story. I cannot wait to share it.
Welcome to the American Real family.
I cannot wait to air this episode.
And now, here's your host, Roger Brooks.
The Francis Scott Key Bridge, also known simply as the Key Bridge, has been in the news lately. On March 26, 2024, key parts of the bridge collapsed after the container ship Dolly struck one of its piers. Four members of a maintenance crew working on the bridge were killed, and another two are presumed dead, while two more were rescued from the river. But the historical significance of the landmass that surround the bridge often go unknown or untold, unless you're a student of history. In 1814, the Battle of Baltimore took place between the British and American forces in the shadow of the War of 1812. American forces repulsed sea and land invasions off the busy port city of Baltimore and killed the commander of the invading British forces. In fact, the resistance of Baltimore's Fort McHenry during bombardment by the Royal Navy inspired Francis Scott Key to compose the poem Defense of Fort McHenry, which later became the lyrics for the Star-Spangled Banner, the national anthem of the United States. But before the collapse of the Key Bridge, Bob Bradley drove over the bridge almost daily. As he looked down over the bridge into Fort McHenry, he pondered how the British ships once invaded. Those thoughts inspired his historical fiction best-selling novel, Beneath the Same Sky, where he intricately weaves the lives of several key individuals against a backdrop of a nation in turmoil. Today, our guest is Bob Bradley. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger. Nice to be here.
Really appreciate it. And wow, I mean, the fact that you used to drive over this Key Bridge daily in and of itself, just because of the current events that are associated with it, is amazing. But then the fact that you recently had your book published, Beneath the Sky, it's just amazing that these events are happening simultaneously. So wonderful job. Would love to know a little bit more about those drives and the types of things that you pondered as you thought about writing a book.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because when the bridge actually came down, it was alarming, obviously, to the city. It shook the city. I mean, Baltimore is a tough town and it takes a lot to shake Baltimore. But that was one of those symbolic moments that I think really grabbed everyone and pulled us together. And it's been a very unifying development. But it's also it's difficult because, like, thousands of people every day, I would drive over that bridge to go from one side of the harbor to the other. And I found it to be a beautiful drive. Now, when you're on the top of a two-lane or four-lane bridge, which you have two lanes going one direction, two lanes going the other, the last thing you want to do is be distracted by the scenic view. But I was often. And the best days were when it was traffic and I was stuck on the bridge so that I could really take a great view. But one of the things that you got from the top of that bridge was a panoramic view Baltimore City, which included looking down into Fort McHenry. You literally looked into Fort McHenry, which was really just a spectacular scene. I enjoyed that drive. I enjoyed those moments because I realized after I started driving this thing that about where that bridge was built was where the British ships would have been sitting during the bombardment. At the very least, they congregated there, put their plans together, and went forward. So I'm one of these guys, it's strange, Roger, where I love to be where history took place, not just in the same town or in the same region, but in the very spot, you know, and you get in that spot and you feel it. So I started feeling this thing and I started feeling the story and I recognized that this was something that was told about the War of 1812, which is called the Forgotten War. This is the war between the Revolutionary War and the Civil War that most people know very little about. So I started doing research and looking into this story to figure out what was this story all about. And the stories embedded in that story are just spectacular. There's so many that need to be told, that deserve to be told. So as I'm sitting on that bridge day after day after day after day, I started putting this thing together in my brain, and it turned out, I think, very well.
No, and look, it's one thing to think about writing a book, to have these thoughts. I'm sure everyone listening and watching, and really everyone has a book in them, I believe, but to actually take the next step and take action on that is a really big deal, right? So the fact that you made that happen, you know, I guess the question is why? Why did you write this book? What was it that was tugging at you to actually make it happen?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, when I started doing the research, I connected with the stories personally. I mean, it really was a story that in my mind was a love story tucked inside of a very complicated subject. And that is, it was a love story inside of slavery, inside of that sort of mindset, inside of war, inside of turmoil. And I started thinking about my own life. I started thinking about being in the third grade when I was one of the first classes to be engaged in integration, where Black students were bused into my neighborhood and we went to school with them. It was relatively new concept. And despite what everybody had told us in terms of what to expect and how the Black kids were going to act and the way we were not going to get along and the way we were going to end up having riots in schools, we were terrified of this sort of thing until we got to know each other. And once we got to know each other, we fell deeply in love with one another. My best friend was a friend named Teddy Valentine. And Teddy was from the other part of town, the other side of the tracks. And I was never to be friends with Teddy, but he and I connected and we became very good friends. And, you know, Teddy was probably the poorest person I ever met in my life. He wore the same pants, the same shirt, same belt, and often no shoes to school every day. But he came with this smile and this love and this radiance that was so spectacular that I just wanted to be close to the guy, right? So we got to be very close. We became very good friends. And the very beginning of the book is really telling my story with Teddy. It's not autobiographical, but there's a lot of my experiences, especially with people from another race, that is brought to bear. So when I started thinking about, okay, think about, Roger, think about this for a second. You're a slave. Okay, you've had your life destroyed by an institution, a country, by individuals. Your family has been ripped apart. You've been separated from your loved ones. You've been beaten. It's just a horrific experience. Sometimes you got to look at it, right? I think I had to look at it. I had to really take a deep look into the subject. And then to think that the country that had done this to you was going to war and they were asking you to fight for that country. Well, you had to make a decision. What were you going to do? And so, you know, that's really the basis of this story. It's around, you know, three groups of people, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But for me, I thought about Teddy Valentine. I thought about Larry Stepney, my football coach from Norview High School in Norfolk, Virginia, who was one of the first Black football players to play in that era. Back in the 50s and 60s, the stories he would tell were horrific, but he didn't tell them out of bitterness or anger. He told them from a position of forgiveness. And I don't know how he does that. I don't, from what he tells me and the stories I hear, I don't know how he forgives, but he does. And I think of, you know, Johnny Tillett, a lobbyist in North Carolina, a Black man who just does amazing things for his community. And Johnny still faces racism on a daily basis. You'd never know it. He's the kindest, most gentle man you've ever met. All the respect in the world for him. So I think of all these people. I think of Teddy. I think of all of the times that I've been placed in a situation where I've been told what to think. I've been groomed to see the world a certain way. And I think it's easier to hate a label than it is a person. And so my goal, the reason I wanted to write this, was to help people begin to identify with not just the institution of slavery or the label of slavery, but the people that were involved, were wrapped up in it. I didn't want them to think of just a war. I wanted them to think of the individuals who were caught up in it. I don't like them to think about just the British Navy and the British Army, which were brutal, but the people who made those institutions up, right? So that was really the point and what I was trying to get to. And I think we got close. I think it's a story that when people read it, I think they're surprised at where it goes.
Wow. That's really profound, and so happy that you were able to share that with us. You know, from the standpoint of putting on your author's cap, again, a lot of people think about writing a book. It could go in a million different directions, right? So the fact that you were able to intertwine parts of your upbringing into the stories of what happened in the shadows of Orb 1812, pretty remarkable. But that's what makes writing so remarkable, right? That's what I love about it, is that you have the freedom as an author to take the story where you wish. And, you know, I have, you know, my own personal belief is that the thoughts that come to us as authors, obviously, yes, they're from our own conscious mind, our own subconscious mind. But I also believe that the inspiration for such thoughts could come from even a higher power that we may not know. And I don't think we need to know, but curious, you know, and my writing coach calls it the creative unconscious. You know, there's a lot of different, some people call it God or whatever it may be, but do you feel that as you were contemplating the story and putting pen to paper, that you were pulling some of this and things were coming to you from a higher source?
There are parts of this book I don't remember writing, quite frankly. I would sit and I would start writing, and 2 hours later I would stop and I would read it and I would go, where did that come from? Roger, I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that this is a story that I think that I believe personally, I believe that God helped me put together, right? I think the nudges and the pushes and the times when I didn't have words, that things were flowing out of my hands that I didn't really know. I couldn't tell you how I wrote these things. There are parts of it I can't read hardly because it's so gut-wrenching. I don't remember writing some of this stuff. So yeah, I also believe that the souls of these people that we're writing about, they're not too far away from us ever. And right. I think that there's probably an excitement from Frederick Hall and Grace Wisher and all of these characters who were here, who lived, who strove for something better for their families. I get the sense that they were very excited to see that their stories were being told. And sure, I think I was getting insights. I don't have conscious memory of voices in my head, but I did dream a lot, and I would wake up with ideas that I didn't go to bed with. I would sit down and write, and I would write things that I didn't have an outline for it. So yeah, it was a very, I don't want to sound weird, but it was mysterious in a lot of ways and quite beautiful. And so that's the part that I think helped me get over the fear of writing, right? To me, writing is creating art. And yeah, you can write it for yourself, that's great. But the minute you become vulnerable and you share it with somebody, it's hard, it's scary. You know, there's some really great writers in this world, and you just don't want people to think it stinks or it's not readable. And that's the part I had to try to get over. It wasn't writing it, it was sharing it. The sharing part was the hardest because you just don't know. I mean, is anybody going to like this stuff? Is it just going to go right, you know, right through the galaxy and no one will pick it up? And so you find trusted friends and you find folks that, you know, they would be kind. And but yeah, it worked out, I think, pretty well in that sense. But yeah, I do believe that God pushes us. God nudges us. God reveals things to us in a time that we can get those thoughts down. Not really our own thoughts, although they are in a way. I think that they're inspired by something far greater than I am. So.
No, remarkable. And, you know, what you just talked about, I've experienced myself as a writer. As you know, our publishing company publishes a lot of writers, had many similar conversations. So I always like to take a moment during these conversations for people that are listening and watching. I think that's a great moment of encouragement. If you are contemplating a book, or if you've written a book and you're, you know, fearful of taking that next step, I think what you just outlaid for us is, you know, very becoming of the possibilities of being vulnerable, of sharing that manuscript, of taking that next step to be able to go from an idea to a manuscript, to getting it edited, formatted, and then, you know, doesn't, you know, it takes time, but it's not that long before you have a beautiful book put together as you've done. So, but it's, you know, it's the content itself that excites me to be able to work with authors like you, to be able to get your story out to the world. And, you know, your book, as many others, they'll live forever. And I do believe too that we're inspired from a lot of outside friendly forces helping us to get it done. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, real quick, I just wanted to say also the genre of historical fiction is an interesting one, because you don't have to create. I mean, when people write these stories that are completely fictional and they're creating every aspect, you know, that's incredible creativity. I didn't go there. So historical fiction has a lot of that built in already. A couple of key points. You know, obviously, I'm a white guy writing about a very intensely personal subject of slavery that my ancestry did not go through. So I tried to be very sensitive to the fact that I don't have that experience in my lineage, in my ancestry. Important to note that, right? I'm not trying to be a historically accurate person necessarily, because there's not a lot written about slavery in terms of the personal experiences of slaves. Just not a lot out there. We didn't record a lot of that, unfortunately. We lost a lot of great stuff. There's this whole idea in this country around cultural appropriation. So I try to be very careful around that. I wanted to be sensitive to the fact I did not change the language. I didn't change the dialect. I didn't try to make British officers sound like British officers, because I didn't know how to do that. I didn't take the African-American dialect and put it into this book. I just tried to write a modern language book utilizing stories around those folks. And I wanted to be really careful. And also just the idea of historical fiction. It's important to note when you're writing historical fiction, you want to try to stay as true as you possibly can. And when you find a gap in the history where the story isn't told, you try to fill in the blanks a little bit and walk the story along. So anybody who's looking for a history book on the War of 1812, this is not it. This is a different concept. Historical fiction is not designed to be historically precise. It's the backdrop. It's on a Broadway show, it's the sets, right? It's the scenery. The dialogue is, a lot of it's fictional. Now, a lot of it is historical. At the back of the book, and I wrote an epilogue which goes through all the characters, which ones are historical, which ones are fiction. So, but I think that's a really important note for people to understand. I spent a lot of time in the introduction talking about this. This is historical fiction and not to be taken as a history book.
Yeah, no, great points. Thanks for framing that up. And, you know, it's one thing to have the concept, the outline for the storyline itself. And then the whole other challenge is developing the characters. So I'd love if you could spend a little bit of time, number one, talking about how you came up with the characters and then how you develop those characters into the story.
Yeah, so I actually went backwards in my life to find the inspiration for these characters. So some of the historical, I mean, the fictional characters, one of the more popular characters is a woman by the name of Mama Rose, who was the grandmother of a slave child that we get to know very well. His name was Frederick Hall, who was a historical person. So Mama Rose was his grandmother, who taught him great wisdom that was much, much deeper than just the physical aspects of slavery. She taught him about all sorts of things around nature and where God was in nature and how God loved everyone the same, regardless of their skin color. A lot of just foundational truth she would teach. It was easy to develop her, because I've met so many people that are of African-American descent who have this beautiful spiritual view of the world. They have this beautiful spirit that I have a hard time accessing in my own life. So I've seen it through a man by the name of Lou Hall, who was a very dear friend of mine until he passed away recently, who was a mentor of mine, who taught me all of these things. And he was raised by his grandmother, And basically, she taught him all of these things. So this is basically the story of Lou Hall's grandmother, Mama Rose. That's where she came from. Now, what's interesting about the actual historical people, and again, this might seem a little esoteric or strange, but if you allow yourself to get quiet, get really quiet, and search for Grace Wisher, Frederick Hall, and actually let them tell you who they are, I believe they will tell you who they are. They will tell you their character, the content of who they were, the way they thought, the way they processed. And so you have to learn to listen to things that you can't hear, which was a great experience. It was a lot of fun. So I got to know these historical characters that are in a really neat way. You know, there's some of these people are my family members that I put out there. Some of the characters are based off of people that I knew who were, I think at the time, doing a little bit of race baiting back in the 70s and trying to tell us what to fear rather than just embracing life and embracing people. So you're going to get a whole lot of people. I think people will be able to relate to most every one of these characters fairly easily. But for me, the fictional characters are based on somebody that I knew in some way. The historical characters, the historical people, I had to learn to listen in a way that is a little off-centered, if you will. But I think it's the greatest, it's the best way to get to know your subject is to listen to them and let them kind of push you and guide you where you need to go.
Yeah, that's remarkable. And I'm smiling a lot because I'm in the final stages of finishing a novel that I've been working on for many years. And you know, oftentimes you go through this process and you think, oh, maybe I'm the only one that this happens to, but you kind of validate a lot of that, where if you sit with the characters, they will come through you. And it's wonderful to hear you validate that.
Yeah, it's really, I was, one of my favorite parts of this whole thing was getting to know the characters, whether they were fictional or whether they were historical, didn't matter. Even the quote unquote bad guys, the British, they had great stories. They were doing what they thought they needed to do to defend the crown and the King of England. They were doing their duty. We would define that as patriotism if they were on our side, right? Sure. But because they were on the other side, they were painted as the barbarians. And they were in a lot of ways, but they had families. They had children. They had grandchildren. They were people. And to be able to try to get into their lives a little bit was fascinating. Really interesting.
Great. So do you want to share anything more about the story, the premise of the book, or do you feel you've covered most of it? Because we want people to read it, obviously.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the overarching theme of the book, is really a love story tucked into a very complicated situation. I think that I hope people walk away thinking a little differently about certain subjects. Really, if I can just get right down to it, I hope people who look like me, my skin color, look at this and say, oh, I didn't recognize the contributions that African Americans had to US history. And today we see, you know, LeBron James and Michael Jordan, and you know, we see performers and we see, and they're heroes, they're great people, but there's so much more to this community that I think people like me, we don't see it. We don't recognize it. We don't value it. We don't validate it. So I hope that that's something that people with white skin look at and go, we should be grateful. We really need to honor, be grateful. And then, and the second side of this is, I hope someone who might pick this up who would be Black would walk out feeling proud of what their ancestors did to build not just work in fields and the terrible things that happened to them, but what they did that built this country. And it was in no small way they built it. They built this country off the labor of their ancestors. There's back. So again, the whole story of Grace Wisher is an African-American girl, 13-year-old indentured servant, who actually stitched the flag that was over Fort McHenry that Francis Scott Key wrote the poem about. The flag was still there. It was her flag. she had a major role in stitching that flag together, 30 feet by 42 feet. Now think about that for a second. Hand stitched that flag that held up during the battle. And I just think that's incredibly symbolic of the value that African-American people have had on this country. This is a flag that the national anthem is written about that, you know, a lot of very hyper patriotic people are very proud of, but they don't know who created that very flag. And then I have friends who are Black who are very angry at the national anthem, and they don't necessarily understand who stitched that flag either. And so, you know, we're all in this together in this really strange way. And it's easy to get quite binary and pull ourselves apart and argue and fight and yell at each other. But when you really look at it, we did this together in many ways that we often overlook. So again, I'm not trying to gloss over slavery at all. Absolutely not. Horrific situation, lots of damage, lots of generational trauma. It's addressed in the book. But I hope that folks can walk away on both sides and feel proud about what their side did. And I think that's important.
Yeah. So, Bob, let us know how people can get your book, Beneath the Same Sky. I know you have a website and it's on Amazon.
Yeah, that's really the two main ways. You can go to bobbradleycreative.com and you can just order it right off the website. We are sending those books out direct. So they'll be signed and they're numbered and they're embossed. It's really kind of a neat thing. Really excited about that. Or you can go to amazon.com and look it up, and it's there as well. It's in hardback, it's in paperback, and it's in ebook format.
That's wonderful. And let's, you know, I'd love to share a little bit more, if we can, about you and your background. Born and raised in Norfolk, Virginia, is that right?
And yeah, raised in Norfolk, Virginia, at a time when, you know, we were trying to figure out a lot of racial things. It was an interesting time. I grew up, my family was, I don't even know that we would be considered middle class. I think we were more lower middle class in the sense that I qualified for free lunches at school, along with many of my other friends. So I grew up in a town that was a tough Navy town, a lot of people coming and going. So you get to know people for a couple of years and they were gone. It was tough to make friends and keep friends. But most of my experience through school anyway, took me through a lot of mixed race scenarios. So I played football with some really great guys. I mean, absolutely some of the best years of my life were my 4 years of high school football. My teams were at least 60-40 Black. And you know, it's interesting when you get in the huddle and you look across the line, you don't care what color your guys are. You know, I played quarterback. So my life was in their hands. I love these folks. So I had a lot of that background in my life. I also grew up in a time where most of the folks that were around me, the neighborhood I grew up in, had a different view of Black folks. We were not to really connect. We weren't supposed to. But as life often does, it doesn't give you the choice. When you meet somebody and you get past all the barriers and you realize, oh, this person's just like me. There's no difference. My skin color is the only difference, and that's nothing. So I grew up with a lot of that. But I you know, I had a great time. I went to college in Tennessee, played baseball for 3 years. Had a couple of surgeries, which took that out, and finished up at Towson University in Baltimore. Got married to my wife. Had been married since 1987. So that's a long time. That's a very long time.
Four boys, so, right?
We raised four boys. We have three of them are married. We have four grandchildren now. It's the most amazing time of life, Roger. It's just really beautiful. So I came from a very interesting place, and I've wound up in a very interesting place, and the journey from point A to point B has not been linear, but it has been beautiful. It's been quite spectacular.
That's wonderful. And tell us, do you have another book in you? Any plans to do anything?
Yeah. Yeah. So I find that I'm probably my best self when I'm writing, right? I'm the most relaxed, yeah, and most calm. I've got to play. It's probably therapeutic, right? It's, yes, probably very cathartic to write. So I do a lot of writing on medium.com. You can find my stuff under Bob Bradley. a lot of short form, sort of life observation things. People seem to enjoy that. So I keep writing those. But then I fell in love, absolutely fell in love with Mama Rose from this book, from Beneath the Same Sky. In fact, it's her line that named the book, where she's talking to her son, her grandson, Frederick Hall. And she says, you know, there's no difference between us and them. We all exist beneath the same sky. Mm. And for Mama Rose, the sky was nature, which was God. And so the God was the sky, and the sky was God, and nature and God were one. So in a sense, the title of the book is Beneath the Same God, right? Yeah. So yeah. Her narrative created the title of the book. And I've just fallen in love with her. I just don't want to let her go. So working on a piece called The Ballad of Mama Rose, which is really her story, her song, her life. And we want to tell more about her because she was interesting. In the book, her story ends in a really fun, creative way, I think. And there's more, just so much more to her in a prequel sort of way to let people understand how she came into being. So that's what I'm working on now. We'll see where it goes.
Awesome. It's great to hear. And look, it's no secret. Our company, American Real Publishing, published your book. Yes. It was wonderful to work with you. Our team really enjoyed working on your project. And this is not a sales pitch, but would just love for you to talk a little bit about the publishing process, because the writing process, that's one thing, getting the book written. But then there's that whole other back end that, you know, it can be pretty grueling for a lot of authors, and it's hard to navigate the industry. So it'd be great if you could talk a little bit about your experience with that.
Yeah, I think the experience with American Real has been one of the neatest experiences I've had, primarily because, Roger, I first saw you on Facebook on an ad. Who's this dude, right? who's this guy? Yeah. And you were talking about a lot of things I was going through and a lot of the struggles I was having. And you made a lot of promises. And I'm like, this can't be right. So I called the number, and I didn't get some person that wasn't you. I got you. You picked up the phone and you and I are talking. I couldn't believe it. And you made the same promises. Now, again, you're right. You write a book. You write a story, you have something that you think you want to put out, terrifying in and of itself, the thought. But there's a whole different world that exists around how you get your book edited, how you do line editing, how you do proofreading, how you do formatting, all of these things. There's probably a dozen or more things that you need to do to get that book ready to go. You don't want to put out something that's not right, right? You just don't. And so you made a lot of promises about what American Real Publishing would do to help get this book over the finish line. And so I thought, you know what? The guy picked up his phone. I like that. So I'm going to do business with Roger. and then I realized I wasn't doing business with Roger. I was doing business with Roger's team, which was great. Again, you know, finding an editor, a line editor, finding beta readers, trying to put all that together yourself is really difficult to do. Can be done, I suspect. I couldn't do it. So to have Roger's team ready to go, and to have another person named Roger on the team, who was the graphic design artist who come up with the cover and all of the stuff that graphically, it was amazing. So you get quickly out of that writing from you're isolated and you're alone and you're writing, and maybe there's some collaboration going on. But after that point, you need a team. And if you're trying to do that alone, that's a tough one. It can be done, but it's tough. I just think that what I've experienced with you all has been wonderful. It's been great. And you delivered. You delivered on every promise. So
that's great to hear. No, that's awesome. Thank you. No, fun. It's a fun process. And again, I always encourage, whether you work with us or any other company, the fact that you can have an idea when you're driving over the Key Bridge and then be able to bring it to life. It's almost, to me, it's almost like, you know, it's a calling, in that you were meant to write this book for reasons that are bigger than you, for reasons that you don't need to know, because you don't know who's going to read this book. Like you said, black or white or, you know, purple, doesn't matter. whatever color you are is irrelevant. It's the content that we hope people are able to, you know, take that in, make their own opinions, and be able to benefit some way from your word. So congratulations on getting it done. It also became a bestseller very recently. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And I know you had a lot of people download that book in a very short period of time, which is just remarkable.
Yeah, I think it's a testament to the work that you all did as well. I mean, that was another promise you made, that you had a promo program that would help push this thing out and get it in a position to be a number one bestseller. I said to you before, I'm laughing at you at that point. I'm going, Roger, I'm looking to sell 6 or 7 copies to family and friends and be done with it. And you're like, no, we got this plan. So it was great to see. You know, another thing that I think is really important about a book like this, especially today in our culture and our environment where politics can get kind of a little, you know, wacky at times. I am not a leftist. I am not a person that lives on the right. I see value in both. I wrote the book from the middle. I truly wanted to find something that both sides could really, really like and both sides would really, really not like. But really the hope was that I wanted to get a story that would bring people closer together through a subject that typically drives us apart. Because anytime we talk race, anytime we talk slavery, you know, it seems like we just start yelling at each other. We're not talking to each other. We're yelling at each other. And I really wanted to put a book together that brought people together. And I think that that was my original vision behind this whole thing. And to find a company that I could partner with that would buy into that. You know, you have a diverse team. You have different colored skin people working for you that worked on this project that helped us put this thing together. It was powerful. I think your team was the embodiment of the story I told. I think it was great. So congratulations to you all. You do a great job. I think you help people achieve their dreams, and writing books are important. And, you know, it's legacy stuff we leave behind.
Yeah, no, great. Bob Bradley, thank you so much. Welcome to the American Real family. It's a pleasure to have you on today. Can't wait to see what you do with book two. I think we need to see more of your character and bring her more to life. So looking forward to that. Folks, you can pick up the book, Beneath the Same Sky. Go to Amazon. We'll put the links below in the show notes. Bob, thanks so much. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to American Real. For more stories like this one, be sure to stop by AmericanReal.tv. Follow us on all social media to stay up to date with everything American Real. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and contact one of our publishing experts if you're ready to publish your book and become a best-selling author.